Building a business is nothing to do making money or having that private jet or whatever. They're all byproducts. Mm. Your fulfillment is coming from the pride of the business you built, right? It may be nothing more than I went to IIT Kanpur. These people are from IIT Kanpur. They stayed in the same dorm and somebody I know knows them. Right. Maybe that's the only reason you're angel investing. Those networks don't happen for women.
I was a first-time entrepreneur in once upon a time. And I remember being, you know, very just scared of VCs. But today, you know, when someone, you know, green, you know, who's doing it for first time, this first 6 months into that, comes and, you know, pitches to you.
The wrong thing in the pitch is, you know, they talk to me about the next 5 or 7 year plan, which, you know, they can't know really.
India Alpha, you know, the economy growing nearly 10x over the next 25 years. Like anyone who picks a problem and just stays with it for a long period of time.
Yeah.
Is bound to do well. Vani, welcome.
Yeah.
Really looking forward to this conversation. I think I've had the privilege of working with you for the last 16 years, but the dynamic was always you as a board member asking me questions. So finally I get the opportunity to send the record straight and ask you questions. So
you always had the answers, but I don't know if I have the answers, okay?
We'll find out today. I'm pretty sure you do. I think, in fact, you know, in preparation, I mean, I know your background, but I still, you know, going through the work you've done. And over 4 decades, I think, you know, 3 very different, you know, hats, you know, as a professional, then doing your own startups in Silicon Valley. And I remember in my Bay Area days, reading about your exploits in some ways. You know, you were among some of the early Indian entrepreneurs who started company in late 90s, early 2000s. And, you know, so that's a big inspiration. It was great to eventually get an opportunity to work with you. And the last almost 2 decades, you know, coming back to India and, you know, doing Kalari. So I want to start there. You know, after 20 plus years in the US, it couldn't have been easy to move back to India. Like, what was a, was that always a plan that you'd come back someday? It was more of a something, you know, opportunistic at that time. Like, what made you come to India when the ecosystem was very, very early? In fact, you were among the very few people who can help build that ecosystem in India.
So, you know, my destiny, life has never been by plan, right? And sometimes we, and this is for young people, and there are a lot of them that we work with as founders, but also in our office, in the investment roles. And overall, in general, I see a lot of anxiety among young people about the future, right? And I have the vantage, I turned 60 this year, so I have the vantage of looking back. And I think the best things that have happened to me have happened unplanned. And in some ways, letting life unfold, I think there's a beauty to it. And because you don't know everything, you don't have all the data to plan. It's no different than your company or anything else, and life is even more complicated. If we can't plan quarterly numbers exactly, how to plan life exactly, right? So I had no plan of coming back. I've always loved my Indianness and my childhood, like I think most middle-class childhoods in India was rich in love, relationships, joy, and all those things. And we never really thought we lacked anything. And so the context of your mind matters a lot, right? And I always felt rich. Not financially, my family was not, but I never felt a lack, right? So that matters. So I think coming back to India was happenstance, was just a spontaneous decision. It could not have been planned because it was an intersection of so many things. Unplanned, for the first time in my entire working career, I was free with my time. I had sold my company, I had exited my company rather. And then I had the financial stability and didn't know what I wanted to do next, right? I was in my, I had just turned 40. And it was a time for a lot of reflection. I also don't like to be in a comfort zone. I think you stagnate and you get complacent. And then you start getting unhappy with yourself. And when you are unhappy with yourself, of course, you make everybody else also unhappy because you look at the world with a little bit of tinted glasses and yeah. jaded, you know. So I'm okay to fail. What is failure after all, right? And you need to do that to be outside your comfort zone, not worry about right. optics.
Right. So right? even if you say you're comfortable being outside your comfort zone, but in 2005-06, you know, today, you know, India's stock is, you know, all-time yeah. high. Everybody yeah. wants to be in yeah. India. Did you see anything, you know, beyond, you know, your love for India?
I saw a lot of things, Mukesh. It's the small things that cascade in your head. Mm-hmm. So I left India in 1985, right? So I came back end of 2005 and spent 1 month in India, which I had not done in 20 years, right? Of course, I visited every yeah. year, but it would be at most a week, right? Then that time I spent on my own, which also I had not done, wandering up and down India. I went to rural India, I went to urban India, just traveling. Yeah. I spent a whole day in a Gurgaon mall, which was a fascinating thing because there were no malls when we grew up, right? And this was 2005, even Gurgaon didn't have so many malls, right? And just talk to random people. The one good thing in India is people will talk to you. They'll tell you their whole life story, yeah. right? Just the confidence of people, their own view of their life and the consumer aspiration, right? Was interesting. And I remember I went to a Reliance Fresh store to pick up something. Reliance Fresh at that time was putting these stores. And as I was standing in the line, a funny incident happened. The cashier tried to push me ahead in the line. And there was a guy standing in front of me who probably was a blue-collar person. You know, and I wasn't even looking to cut the line. But we all grew up with the sabjiwala trying to treat you as the favorite or whatever. And he just said, no, I mean, I'm in the line, right? So, and that was great for me to say India from an equitability and that confidence is also the lines are blurring, right? To say my rupee is the same as your rupee.
Right.
And that's a big societal shift. That also was important. Then I remember just taking a taxi and this taxi driver talking to me saying next week he was going on a vacation. So I started asking him, where are you going on a vacation, right? He said, I'm going to Bangkok. I mean, these were all revelations to me. And then he said to me, you know, I work very hard. I deserve a holiday. And I was thinking, my father, when did he aspire to take a holiday? He would never think of going to Bangkok. If we took a holiday, it was on LTC, which if you are a child of any government employee, you will know what I mean. And it would be to some place where you have a relative or a friend whose house you can stay, right? So it was almost unthinkable. You'll stay in a hotel and indulge yourself, right? I saw, to me, such big societal shifts. I said, how is this going to be served? It requires new brands, technology at its forefront, because that's the only way access and affordability can reach mass. Without technology, you can't do that, right? So I saw a perfect recipe. So this was not just a passion project. Of course, passion is important because otherwise you're not motivated to do anything. But to me, at least, the 85 India I left, the 2005 India I saw was a confident, aspirational nation that was ready for ready and demanding experiences, right? When I first met you, to me, it was not unthinkable that someday we will solve the problems of actually building a large internet business that's based on lifestyle, right? Because these were all the back points to why I got excited with your vision of Myntra. Of course, there were many things, COD, delivery, those are all problems to solve. But did I fundamentally believe in the opportunity? The first time I met you, I believed in the opportunity. In fact, I believed even before I met you because I didn't know you, but I used Myntra as a customer. And the customer service that you had created, even as a young Myntra, was so good. I said, you know, Indian consumers want customer service, but they don't get it, right? The conventional retail has never really served the customer. It's like you exist. It's not that you, customer is king, has never been the mantra, right? When could you return things? Before the e-commerce advent, return, you never could return anything, right? So the consumer was never right. So that people would pay for that relationship of consumer leverage was not such a distant idea for me, right? So I was very excited for the new India.
Excellent. I'm glad, you know, you could see early signs and enough of conviction to move back, you know, lock, stock and barrel. You know, your kids were very small at the time, you know, can imagine it being easy. But also, you know, just like you move back, you know, some of the other people like Subrata, Ashish Gupta. So we are also, come say, Indian, you know, entrepreneurial ecosystem benefited from these folks who spent one or two decades in the US being part on the, either as an entrepreneur or a professional or a VC. And so the whole ecosystem also benefited from that thought process. You know, personally for me also, having worked in US for 10 years for a bunch of startups, I kind of knew the startup DNA.
Yes.
So that was, you know, it would have been very difficult to imagine all of that from scratch, right, sitting in India.
Yeah, I think, you know, for the decision to move back was easy. The question was, are there entrepreneurs you can fund? Because the notion of capital for equity, though today is so commonplace, in 2006 was a alien concept, you know, and I had entrepreneurs ask, what is the catch, right? Because this concept, we had debt, right? But we didn't really had risk capital. What do I have to collateralize? Do you need a personal collateral? No, you don't, right? So this whole risk capital equity mindset also was not that entrenched. But having been beneficiary of that as an entrepreneur myself, then I think we had an opportunity to create this early model for India. And if a startup ecosystem has to grow, you need certain ingredients. Of course, you need the entrepreneurs because they are the sauce, right? They are the glue that holds it together. But you need risk capital and you need people who are patient and are not, I mean, of course, you need returns, but for the sake of returns, don't do wrong things in the development of the company out of anxiety, not wrong things from a compliance, but wrong things from operational and strategic involvement, right? You have to give a little bit of free rein to the founder, not on governance, but on operations and strategy, right? And you have to be a little patient. And all of that grounding, whether it was Subrata, Ashish, me, Sudhir, and a handful of people had already gone through personal experience of that, right? So,
and so before, you know, you started Kalar in Bay Area, you built two startups, both had a phenomenal outcome. But in those companies, you know, you were backing yourself in some ways, like, you know, and then shifting gear, I mean, changing country, very different ecosystem, and also changing the modus operandi where you are not going to execute anymore, you're betting on other people to execute.
Yeah.
How was that transition for you? Like, you know, both in terms, I'm sure there are a lot of benefits of having built company on your own, your own relatability, but also not being able to drive things on your own and letting somebody, you know, especially, you know, earlier stage entrepreneurs, they're all, you know, in some ways very naive also, didn't know like what will work, what will not work. So how was that whole transition for you in first few years?
You know, Mukesh, we are all type A's. So people have a misnomer that type A means you micromanage. Type A means that you can't let go of control and you have to do it all, right? I think to me, type A just means that you demand a lot out of yourself. That's really what a type A is, more than its relationship with others, right? To me, after 10 years, and the way I always thought about it is 40 quarters of being a CEO, delivering quarterly results, I was done with it. It didn't hold that interest for me. I could perhaps do it a third time, better or worse. We don't know. Path not taken and what the destiny would have been. But it really just didn't interest me that much. I'll tell you two quick stories. One, I told how life goes not by your plan. Mm. But if anybody had asked me in my early 20s, I think I saw myself as an intellectual, maybe a professor, maybe, you know, teaching. Mm-hmm. All those had some charm to me. But I didn't go down that route. So to sort of not be the one in the center was, for me by nature, all right, right? The type A was really about expectations of myself, not that I have to own everything. So not being operationally involved was okay because I was entrepreneurial in a different way. I was building my own firm, right? So that has its own set of challenges. People think a VC job is very glamorous. It isn't.
Glamorous also, in addition to...
I don't think at all. I don't think anything about my job is glamorous. But it was entrepreneurial in its own way, and it was fulfilling for me. But I didn't need to control the founder or be involved in their work, right? And if you are a leader who has built companies, you already learn that your role is to hire great leaders, right? And empower them. If you're the best engineer in your company, or you're the best marketeer and you're the best of everything, or you think like that, then you're probably not building the right leadership firm, right? So the control part was very easy and natural. But the aspect of empowering others, I had attended a talk by Clint Eastwood, and somebody asked him this question. And he said, you know, of course, I've been a successful actor, but I realized that I have so much more joy in being a director who is creating the stories that puts the actors and other actors in the spotlight. So I have a reflected halo, right? So when you succeeded at Myntra, there is a deep pride for me also, right? And what you built with cult brand, right? Of course, you've done all of the work and the heavy lifting, but having participated in seeing that from the front row, right, so to speak, there is also a joy and a learning and hopefully some small impact or difference we made in that journey. So I think this notion that if you are an operating person, you can't let go, you have to know yourself well, but I don't think it's that hard. At least for me, it was a very natural sequence of doing something else new and different.
Got it. And your own companies as well, the problem you're hiring senior leaders and empowering and delegating and so on some way, so that template continues. I think just, you know, since you mentioned briefly, you know, Myntra and cult, I think I've been very fortunate, Vani, you know, to work with you, Subrata, Sudhir, all of us worked together for the last 16 years.
Yeah.
Just probably very unique.
I don't think
that many partnership. I hope it continues. I think it's been incredibly helpful. You know, I've gone through my own journey, but I think through the evolution, I think I was able to count on lot of support, guidance, you know, different inputs from different, you know, investment board members. So I think it was a great, you know, symbiotic, not was, is a great symbiotic relationship, I think. You know.
I think a lot of founders, and it's a whole different conversation than the one we are having right now, but don't think deeply about what do you need in that relationship. And a lot of times, and we have never had an adversarial relationship, we may have difference of opinions. When I say we, I mean us as a whole board and an investor group and the management team, including you, right? I've never had an adversarial relationship over many years, right? And I think founders don't think enough about how that alters your life. The deep trust to work together for a common outcome and for a common good, that can be very empowering. And I get very sad when I see ideas that really had a lot of merit and founders who are very talented, and somewhere this relationship aspect goes sideways, and reason and maturity goes out the window and emotion takes over. But I think one of the reasons we have been together, able to build Myntra to the powerhouse that it is and cult to the powerhouse that it is because there was a deep trust and involvement collectively.
And, you know, it works wonderfully, especially when things don't go well. I mean, as recently as the, you know, pandemic.
COVID,
you know, 20, you know, starting to forget the years. 20, 20, 21,
21, 22,
so difficult.
Yeah.
But, I mean, but we never had internal problems. I think yes. board was fully behind the company. There was a huge empowerment and also full transparency.
Yes.
From our point of view, as a company, there's really nothing to hide or not share with yeah. the board, and that, you know, that.
But I think you were unique there, Mukesh. From the very beginning, you brought a very deep transparency, but also responsibility. Mm-hmm. Nobody asked you, but you said, look, I'm not taking a salary because of this and this situation in the company. The board never asked and would have never asked mm-hmm. because that's not a fair ask. Yeah. But setting that example as a leader, and then even in the very, that, and some can say that's very easy for you to do today, maybe because you have a different financial stability. Mm-hmm. But I think even early in Myntra's journey, when, you know, there was an aggressive operating plan and we weren't quite to the plan, I think you proactively not only keeping the board informed, mm-hmm. but saying, look, I take responsibility as a leader for not meeting the mm-hmm. plan. That may have been natural yeah. For you from your personality, but I think it is unique. Mm-hmm. And some of those seemingly small things yeah. make a very, very big difference to building that trusted relationship, but more importantly, setting that overall culture and example for the company.
No, thanks, Vani. I'm glad you remember all those. I think you go through lots of ups and downs. And I think ultimately, you're navigating those challenging near-death experience, I think which company doesn't go through, right? Including which VC firm doesn't go through,
yeah.
right? You know, sometimes. But how does one navigate? I guess that's when in some ways ends up building your own character, but also the firm's character. And a lot of people around you see that. And I mean, I've been a huge proponent of, you know, just obsessing about the culture one is building the organization, which creates, you know, so Myntra, I've been out of it for now 8+ years.
Yeah.
But a lot of people still tell me like there's something about Myntra is still the same.
Yeah.
And that can only happen during, you know, foundational year.
Yes.
So I'm glad, you know, we were able to do what we did together. I'm going to ask you a lot about, you know, VC and startup, but I want to first change and go to a topic of common interest, you know, which is health and fitness. I think ever since I've known you, you've always been very active. I think there was a time you were trekking, you know, all these crazy places. I think my note says, you know, climb Mount Kilimanjaro at some point, which is 6,000 meters, you know, which is pretty serious height. I think I've never been more than 12,000 feet, which is about 4,000 meters. And, you know, you've been an avid cult user. I think you've stress tested most of the cult offerings, you know.
Yes.
Especially in Whitefield and, you know, of late, I think you've been going very deep into yoga, meditation. So when this whole, you know, journey for you start, and how did it evolve over a period of time? And
I think we both have certain things in common. One is, of course, the whole self-care aspect and not feeling guilty about that. And I think that's sort of sometimes a mindset of our upbringing, that if you take time for yourself, somehow that's selfish. And I debunk that.
For you, suddenly you are now in control of whatever may happen outside, but, you know, how you react is going to...
So the trigger to just send that mad email that you should have never sent to begin with, all of those... you know, are untrained impulses. Yeah. And we see untrained impulses in children and we're trying to train them. Mm-hmm. And it's cute as a child, but as an adult child, if somebody does that, we kind of judge it, right? But we behave that way many times that we don't self-recognize, right? You behave out of impulse. So that was the trigger for me to say, I need this deeper journey of self-awareness to live life intentionally on my terms. Right.
So your meditation journey started before your fitness journey.
My meditation journey started before my fitness journey. And then, like I said, I realized how unfit I was. And I also said, this is a long, life is a long marathon. And so, you know, I have to get fit for... to have the energy for my children, for me to work at the pace that I work, and all of that. So I always feel I'm a very goal and structure oriented person. Mm-hmm. That's just my either trained personality or born personality. I no longer know the difference between the two, but it is what it is. I'm very structured in my thinking of taking a problem, breaking it down and so forth. So I saw a marathon coming up and I said, I'm going to run a marathon. Yeah. And until then, I had not run 1 kilometer also, right?
How many months before the marathon was due?
I think it was about 8 months.
Okay.
And 8 months, 8 to 9 months is actually sufficient time, even if you have never run, to systematically plan. And my thought process was, if you set a goal out there, then you develop the discipline and the process.
Yeah.
And the thing is, these things percolate deeply into all aspects of your life, right? Mm-hmm. The discipline to focus, the discipline to set big goals and work on them systematically.
Yeah.
There may be a day or two that you're frustrated, but you don't give up, don't quit, right? That don't quit attitude, I think, has helped me more than anything else in life, not just in running a marathon, but in everything.
So you trained for that marathon and finished?
So actually, we trained, but we did not do the San Jose full marathon, did a half marathon first.
Yeah.
Then few months later, did the mother of all marathons, which is the Greek marathon. And Greek marathon starts from the city of Marathon, from the tombs of Marathon, and ends in the Athens Stadium, which is the origination of the concept of marathon. So if you go back to history on what happened there, which has always fascinated me, the guarding of the gateway of Europe was that in moment, right? So we ran that marathon. The lesson there, though, is you see a 2D map and you say, oh, yes, a 70-degree incline, that's okay. But when you're actually running the 70-degree incline, so it was quite hilly from what idea, we trained.
So idea to full marathon with...
Less than a year.
Less than a year. I mean, a marathon, for those who don't know, is about almost 42 kilometers.
Yeah.
I have never done more than half marathon, you know, that's also with a lot of effort. So it's quite commendable. But I think this also one reminds me, you know, there's this quote I really like, which says, how you do one thing is how you do everything.
Yeah.
In some ways, you know, you applied, you know, you were running your startup, you had the structured thought process and able to strategize, tactic and not quitting and showing up every day, you know, which translates into good performance at, you know, being able to run a marathon within 1 year and probably many other things, including this. You want to just briefly talk about this, you know, Kilimanjaro climb, you know, that sounds very exotic as well as very strenuous.
So I think in some social studies class, maybe in class 7 or class 8, I don't remember, when we were, you know, reading geography, this wonder of something that's very close to equator and in Africa and having a glacier cap somehow fascinated me. And of course, I had not even stepped outside of Hyderabad till I went to US, right? I never traveled on a plane or whatever till I was 21. So the notion of going to Africa to climb something was very far-fetched. But there are some notion, oh, this would be cool to go to this mountain, which has so many zones, because you start out with a, you know, it goes through every zone, right? And you end up at the glacier, but you go through a rainforest zone, you go through a sub-Sahara zone, so there is all, you know, desert, and then you go through tropical zone. So this is a unique mountain from geography, and like I said, it's so close to the equator, right? So it always fascinated me, and packing for this is hard, training for it is hard, just because you have to pack for different zones, the clothes you wear and all of that. A hot one day, in 3 days, you get into really cold. And so all of that, right? So again, it was the same thing. We did a 1 year of training, figure out your gear, because marathon is one thing, but this requires different gear planning, all of that. And, you know, and it was the same drill. Set a goal, plan, condition yourself and attempt it.
With meditation. Okay, let's come back to, you know, the early stage. So at Kalari, most of your focus have been, you know, mostly I think early stage investment. You obviously stay with the company for a long period of time. And look, you know, and a lot of first time entrepreneurs come and pitch to you. And as a, you know, I was a first time entrepreneur, you know, once upon a time. And I remember being, you know, very just scared of VCs. You know, it was quite a task, you know, walking into a VC office. I think somehow it used to be more formal also at the time compared to there now. But today, you know, when someone, you know, green, you know, who's doing it for first time, this first 6 months into that, comes and, you know, pitches to you, what do you look for? You know, what are the few things in first meeting that possibly stand out for you, which, you know, encourages you to invest more time in that person or that, you know, idea?
So I also in my life have pitched to a lot of VCs, right? And have many experiences, some wonderful, many not, some humorous, and, you know, because you meet many kind of people in life. But one thing I realized early on in my life is I have to be myself. And the biggest journey of life is first knowing who you are and then having the courage to just be authentic you. For example, not because of any reason. It's just a choice. I'm a teetotaler. Mm-hmm. I don't smoke. I'm a vegetarian, right? Mm-hmm. And then automatically, the world today, especially the young people, think you have no fun in life. And that's, you lead a very boring life. I don't know. I'm happy with my life. That's really all it is at the end of the day, right? But living your authentic life and not being apologetic to it, I think these are all, again, things that permeate through your life, right? So to me, one of the things intentionally when I was building Kalari was, how and what can we do to make founders feel a bit more relaxed? Yeah. I have no interest in putting founders into extra pressure in pitching to us, right? So how we designed our front office, or how we designed our environment, or how people are greeted, you know, how they are escorted. Those are things, again, I think intentionally at Kalari, we put a lot of focus into. And I don't know what your experience as a founder was, but I have a lot of founders who say, you know, we felt very comfortable in the office.
And I still remember those, I think, tikis on the reception area. That was a wait time, you know, that was the thing to snack on.
Yeah, so, you know, just a lot of little things like this, because I've sat in many VC offices. How do you start founder on the time? Or if you are running late, how do you apologize to them that their time too matters, even if they have come to you for funding? And just ingraining these courtesies into the firm, that we don't exist if entrepreneurs don't exist, right? Our job, an entrepreneur is my customer. Yeah. So, but I have to treat them like a customer, right? So, and, but when first time entrepreneurs or any entrepreneurs come, the first thing for me, because I'm a product-centric person, which is why I like to do seed series A, right? And we have kept our fund size to a certain size so we can continue to focus on this. I'm not that interested in getting involved in companies once they reach a certain size, because the need they have from us is slightly different, right? Is understanding the product vision. So I tend to do well with founders who have relentless focus on what is the product, what is the product purpose, what is the product experience, and the clarity of that, and how much clarity and insights they have matters. Did I learn anything from their insight matters. The wrong thing in the pitch is, you know, they talk to me about the next 5 or 7 year plan, which, you know, they can't know really. And they probably hired some, I don't know, banker or a kid who just finished their MBA to put it together. They have no context of that plan. So why bother? I always, if it gets out of hand, stop them and say, can you talk to me about your product? Right. I want to understand the product, you know, from your vision. The more there is an insight and clarity, the market matters, but not all founders know how to estimate a market. And I'm not looking for that skill. That will happen over time, right? What is there? And I'm not looking for their Excel skills either, right? We can hire a CFO to do that, because you're not going to learn anything about your own business that way. But I think the key is, do you have a unique value proposition that you bring to solve this problem? Right? And that, if I find in a founder, I get very excited.
Got it. No. And irrespective of the whether the founder is just fresh out of college or 10 years of experience, like, the primary thing you're looking for is unique insight about the problem and also the product approach. You know, whether some has a clarity and the kind of commitment to build a product that consumers will love.
And what is interesting is, whether they're fresh out of college or you think somebody has 20 years of experience or whatever, and they would be better at doing this. I don't think so. I think there are certain kind of thinkers that get into problems very deeply and are very passionate about a problem and the approach to solve it, right? And that's what at least I connect to very well. And in fact, even in the board meetings, it's very hard for me to focus on AOP, this, that, and all that until I understand what are your assumptions that are driving, right? You know, how are you envisioning the bigger purpose and picture of your business? Because AOP and all that is a derivative out of it. If that is not clear, then everything is just numbers. You don't know how you're going to even achieve those numbers or why. You know, if you achieve those numbers, why that's going to build a valuable business, right?
Absolutely. I think that makes so much sense to me. I just want to repeat that. You know, it's a just, you know, obsession about building something that somebody is going to love.
Yeah.
If you achieve that, chances are a lot more people will also like it, and AOP and business plan will build itself. I mean, I think it applies to both early stage, but in an existing company, and you know, I'm thinking of, you know, what we are doing at CureFit, even building a new thing, again, you're starting with a number top down market size, $10 billion, whatever it is, that's not going to do anything unless someone, you know, the new product. So I think it's worth repeating again, you know, and the early stage of any new initiative, it has to be about product and the earning that customer love, because what you're building is so unique.
And I think there are great examples of founders who have not been product founders and they've succeeded, but that's a much smaller number. Mm-hmm. Most companies succeed if there is a product founder who has a strong vision of the product and a strong connect and relationship to the customer experience. And if those two are very hard to hire, all the other functions, branding, finance, all of those can be hired. So there are only very, very few founders that I know who don't have the product and yet have succeeded. And somewhere they may have still been closet founders, closet product people, right? So I look for product-centric founders.
Got it, clear.
You were talking about health, right? I see that you have an aura. I do too. And then we have the watch. So in some ways, what's your relationship with gadgets and health?
Yeah, I think for twofold one here. One is I feel, you know, I think you use the word, you know, self-care. I don't think I can function without investment in my health. For me, sleep, fitness, and to some extent, meditation is just integral. For me, like everything else, probably put my kids ahead of, you know, that. But, you know, all the work stuff, you know, come later. And I see my efficiency, mood, everything keeps falling if I am away from that. So one is that, I think, just, you know, very deep conviction. I just, it's like a fuel, you know, which allows me to function. Gadgets, you know, CureFit, you know, we've been learning a lot about health, fitness, and I have a, you know, bit of science background, little, you know, that geeky side to me. So just learning about all these numbers. And today, I think we live in such interesting times where the entire human body is getting digitized.
Yes.
We know so much more. I mean, until recently, people knew way more about their car and their house than about their own body.
Yes.
But these gadgets are enabling that, right? So I kind of enjoy learning. I have the CGM thing also on. So I think I don't look at this data anymore that much, but I think it's great. I think I'm very excited about, you know, what's to come in coming future. As an ecosystem, I think in 2024, we are dealing with all the excess money that got raised in 2021, right? You know, the valuation were, you know, stratospheric and pretty much so much easy money was available. Do you also think over somewhere this larger Indian ecosystem has a little bit paid the price for too much capital coming in too early or compared to size of opportunity?
You know, Mukesh, I look at life from very simple views, okay? I don't know who has paid the price or not paid the price, but ultimately, there is a causal nature and excesses get corrected and that's inevitable. And in that process, there will always be winners and losers, right? Certain principles, even if there was an excess, if you have that keen focus of long-term thinking of your business, you're less likely to pay that price.
I want to ask you, Andar, you know, this, the entrepreneur ecosystem, you know, question. So Indian, you know, VC entrepreneur ecosystem is roughly about, you know, 20-year-old around the time when you move back and you spend, you know, 20 years in Silicon Valley. What are the big differences in the Silicon Valley ecosystem versus Indian startup ecosystem? Because you have the vantage point of, you know, deeply enmeshed in both, and you, I think you continue to be engaged with the Silicon Valley ecosystem as well. Do you see any major difference between the two?
There are three or four major differences. One, of course, is depth of market size, which sometimes gets forgotten. Okay. So the kind of money and valuation that goes into Silicon Valley or US also has an implied size of a market and the rapidness with which that market can be accessed. India, you know, business story is operationally far more intense, right? It's like our traffic. If you have to travel 40 kilometers in US, it's not a big commute. In India, every day, if you have to commute 40 kilometers in Bangalore, you're going to end up with lots of issues, stress apart from physical issues with that level of travel, right? So it's like that speed.
Yeah.
The speed of business in US is a different speed than ours. It's not a good or a bad thing. You just have to tune to this.
Yeah.
What happens many times is we think we can go at that speed. You cannot.
Right.
Your car cannot drive at that speed because the road doesn't allow. Same with your business, right? You can only drive a ship to the power of the engine, right? So that's a big thing where somehow it's law of physics and it gets, and hence law of business, and it gets forgotten again and again.
Yeah,
it will take a lot longer to build businesses in India for many reasons, which is a different topic, and you have to gear for that and build at that pace.
Yeah,
right?
I think probably one more difference is, you know, there are no likes of Google, Facebook, Microsoft who can acquire companies. In US, majority of exit happen through acquisition to these companies, which are, you know, very happy and willing to pay cash.
But there are two aspects to it. They are willing to pay cash for deep IP companies. First of all, we don't have deep IP companies. Secondly, they themselves have a certain market cap, which India doesn't have, right? So, you know, what they are willing to pay is all very relative, right? So we don't have a 3 trillion company. That's our entire GDP. Not that company valuation and GDP is related, but it's a metaphor, right? So, you know, got NVIDIA. Where do we have a $1 trillion hardware company, right? We don't have any companies worth $1 trillion,
right?
So I think this notion of Google is not there to acquire. So I think capital efficiency and the speed of building a business is a concept that every founder has to educate themselves, which is very different from Valley to here.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean we can't build valuable businesses here and still make money and all of that, right? So that's one big difference. The second is, you know, the Eastern culture is a very deeply community culture and Western culture is a very individualistic culture. Now, startup founders by nature somewhere have to be a bit warped to be somewhat individualistic culture, right? You have to somewhere be a little bit of a megalomaniac.
Yeah.
I believe in my conviction. Others don't believe, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I march to my own drumbeat. A little bit of that is needed, right? Or a lot of that is needed. But we tend to get influenced more broadly, right? That may or may not play up to take deep risks.
Yeah.
I also think our aspirations, see, you, unless you want to win a gold, it is, you're not going to end up in Olympics accidentally and get a gold medal, right? It's years of training. So what is your focus? If you want to make junior leagues, you'll make that. You'll never become an Olympic athlete, right? It's a different training process. So are you aiming to build that large business, right? Many times, there is a, we have a, as a culture, funny relationship with money. Building a business is nothing to do with making money or having that private jet or whatever. They're all byproducts. Your fulfillment is coming from the pride of the business you built, right? We have to more and more instill that and create role models that you want to aspire to be like, right? And some of that is happening, but it has taken more of 20 years to get there.
Right.
Some founders had great opportunity, they sell early, right? And why?
And
we have to just think about these concepts and ideas of balancing risk with outcomes. So these are some foundational differences that I see, which, but in the last 5 years, I'm seeing a big shift in the entrepreneurial mindset.
And, you know, with that shift coming in the entrepreneurial mindset, you know, other big shift is, you know, right now, India is on the world's radar and I think the hype is getting to a fever pitch.
Yeah.
Mostly for the right reasons. You look, all the numbers are there.
Yeah.
Largest, you know, growing economy in the world, demographic dividend, stable government, pace of reform, accelerating, and so on and so looking just from that backdrop, you know, compared to like when you and I move back to India, how should today's investor and today's entrepreneur think about, you know, the size of opportunity and how to play it in India?
See, in the venture industry, if you can, an alpha return is like a 10x return, right? If I have a fund that returns 10x, which very few funds do globally, right? That's like a big alpha return. So India at 100, you know, whether it's a 30 trillion economy or as some assume it has a potential to be a 40 trillion economy, is a India alpha, right? At a country level. Right. That is a generational opportunity that happens maybe 300, 400 years. Right. If you have read Rise and Fall of Nations, you see that civilizations go through that big burst and then sometimes then they, because you can't keep up that pace, right? And then they sort of stabilize and so forth. We saw that before for Europe and then America, China, India's time under the sun, so to speak. So India has, India at 100 has an alpha, right? If a country is having alpha, that comes from, that has a dividend to, you know, the citizens at large. It must, if it doesn't, then it will create deep social problems. Yeah. The reform, the government, as it rightly should, has to be about wealth distribution deeper into the society. Right. 1% of the people can't hold 80% of the wealth. Right. That doesn't work in a social graph, right? So, and startups are great for that because they're more democratic about division of wealth, right? So, and that's why also I like the startups from a economic value creation for a country, right? As an economic value engine even for the country. So I think there is a big Indian alpha and we are very fortunate, I think generationally fortunate to be in this moment. I didn't know that when I was born 60 years ago that I'd be sitting in this moment of India's life, right? So for startups and hence the others involved in the ecosystem, whether that's investors, whether that's whatever the support infrastructure, I don't think there's a better time. And for founders also, whether it's India to global, you and I were talking earlier about deep tech. India kind of saying we can also be a leader in technology, which we never really have been. We may have been leader in applications, but not on technology. Whether it's ISRO over years that has shown capital efficiency. We're talking about capital efficiency. Look at what they've done, right? So creating a whole industry of space tech, and you've been deeply involved in that as an angel investor also and early mentor. And, you know, so all of that, if you, and manufacturing, what is happening with India with that, India's EV, IP, and so on and so forth. If you see, there is an industrial development at a grassroots level and also from the incumbents, significant capital going at the infrastructure level, ports, which you need in order to develop economy and so on and so forth, right? So I think it's a very, very exciting time.
There's a good mental model to keep in mind, I think what you're calling India Alpha, you know, the economy growing nearly 10x over the next 25 years, which is not that long, you know, it's been nearly 20 years since you and I moved back to India. So another 20 years will happen. And if we are able to see this alpha happen, I think anyone who picks a problem and just stays with it for a long period of time is bound to do well. The only thing is people who are just maybe keep jumping, wanting on there and, you know, be very myopic and looking for stellar returns, 2-3 year period is probably the only way.
Or a quick win. You may be lucky to get a quick win, but just focus on winning. Quick or not is a matter of destiny.
And, you know, letting the compounding happen. I mean, if the country is, you know, going to compound to 10x, that's just average.
Yes.
If you do like dramatically better,
you could do 100x. 100x, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And you should aim for that.
That's right.
You know, if you aim for that, and I think, I believe several entrepreneurs will be able to achieve that, right? And I feel extremely privileged every time I sit with a founder because I learn something. And one of the most important thing I've learned is to go into every meeting with an open mind. Not to think that I know everything. I don't, because the founder has invested tremendous time thinking about that problem. I have not, right? So I think founders will compound 100x whatever. And if we are privileged to be with them, that's a fun ride.
Right. And part of, you know, our founders compounding 100x, I think I have to ask you this. Why? I mean, the whole VC and entrepreneur ecosystem still contains heavily skewed, you know, just male dominated, and very few, and I hardly know, you know, women investors, you know, that, I mean, you are obviously a very prominent one, but not that many, and same for entrepreneurs and you talk about it, it probably worries you. Who needs to do what for this to change? It's not changing fast enough.
So, my own story, I remember talking to this investor who gave me my angel investment first. Mm-hmm. And if I look back, I was so ignorant, okay? And years later, I talked to him and said, why did you invest in me, right? At that point, I was just happy to take the money. Somebody believing right. in you. And you need that at that point, yeah. right? You don't have all the answers. Mm-hmm. Anybody can invest when you have all the answers. Yeah. But somebody has to connect the dots in certain way that maybe others are not connecting, mm-hmm. right? So he said, you know, when you were pitching, because my area was very different, mm-hmm. I didn't understand what you were pitching, mm-hmm. right? But you were very confident mm-hmm. about the problem and your solution, mm-hmm. though I didn't understand it. And then I felt in judging people that you will not quit. You will do your very best, yeah. okay? No, you can't ask anybody to do more than their best, yeah. right? That's all they can do. And then he said, my daughter, I was thinking about her. And I said, you know, she has no role models, mm. right? And I have a responsibility to create, if I can, yeah. to create role models for her. So I thought I invest so much, then why not, mm. right? Of course, it was an angel investor, not a fund. Mm. And, you know, while that's not very comforting, because mm. he didn't say invested because I was brilliant and wowed him or whatever, but fine, right? But the thing I took away is, do you give people chances, mm. right? Do you try? Yeah. And if each of us did a little bit of that, Mukesh, yeah. it makes a difference. Mm. You have to, for the right reasons, believe in a person.
Yeah.
And many times we are pattern recognizing certain things.
Yeah.
It may be nothing more than, I went to IIT Kanpur, these people are from IIT Kanpur, they stayed in the same dorm, and somebody I know knows them.
Right.
Maybe that's the only reason you're angel investing, right? It's not that at an early stage, there are many reasons to why you are convinced to invest,
yeah.
right?
Mm.
Now, those networks don't happen for women.
Mm.
But if people like you, I, who have opportunity to invest,
yeah.
if we kind of can break that mold,
mm-hmm.
I could not be here
yeah.
if someone didn't believe in me
right.
at some point, right. right? For whatever reasons they believed, even if it was to say, and it was very, I thought, progressive and forward-thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And his own daughter, by the way, is now a doctor who is phenomenally respected,
mm-hmm.
You know, 30 years later,
right.
fast forward,
mm-hmm.
a young girl grown up,
right?
right? But if we all say mm-hmm. we have to create future role models, maybe you get to create only one,
yeah.
right? But that one could have a ripple effect,
right?
right? So, you know, even the CXXO program I've started mm-hmm. is for that reason, to say
mm-hmm.
if we can invest in 5-6 women founders
mm-hmm.
a year, not that you're not validating their business plan or whatever, but all of our validation today
mm-hmm.
has inherent biases.
Yeah.
That is called a pattern,
that's right?
right? We are all recognizing certain patterns.
Yeah.
This college, this community,
yeah.
this sector, you know, there are many things.
Right.
And those patterns work against women,
yeah.
largely. But part of self-awareness is also to understand the implied biases in your pattern
mm-hmm.
and try to break that.
Yeah.
And if more people did that
yeah.
and at least did some portion of their investing more mindfully
mm-hmm.
into women founders, you know, you will create that ripple effect.
Right. So you're saying, you know, action speaks louder than words. And I think everyone has a choice, at least those who genuinely, sincerely care about it and in a position of enabling a path for someone. And I mean, you are obviously an incredible role model, but the more role model we see, it will also inspire other people to kind of follow in their footsteps and, you know, feel that you know, they can also do it as somebody they can relate to.
Yeah.
I hope, you know, a lot more of that happens. We have one last question, Vani, for you. This is for maybe targeting, you know, aspiring VCs.
Mm.
Now, you have been, you know, seen a VC journey. I think VC is also, I think by any stretch of imagination, not an easy profession. What does a learning curve for a VC look like? You know, people who want to potentially be VCs. What, first of all, how should they think whether this is for me or not? And if they want to become a VC, what does, you know, 5 or 10 year journey for them look like to actually become a good investor and enabler for the founders they work with?
See, whatever you want to become, call that VC, call that, I don't know, athlete, call that founder. I think it's really important to first figure out why. And why do you want to be that? And what are you willing to invest into it? Oftentimes when I ask people, why do you want to be a VC? I want to make a difference to a founder. How are you going to make a difference to the founder? Oh, I'll help them with their strategy. But why are you qualified to help them with their strategy? You know, and that's the last thing you can help a founder with, right? Yeah. Imagine me trying to help you with your strategy at Myntra. I may have an opinion, but it cannot supersede your opinion because you are doing this 20 hours a day. How will I know more than you about strategy? Now, I may be able to help you in many other areas, but strategy is actually the last of the things VCs ought to help with, at least from my perspective. So I think a VC is, you have to commit at least 10, if not 15 years of your life. If you want to validate yourself as a VC, are you any good, any bad? Because that's how long the companies are going to take. Are you willing to put that much time into your career to do that? If you're motivated to do that. My motivation was, I really still today feel I was extremely lucky to have an opportunity at the ground zero of an evolving ecosystem and be able to learn and participate as it grew along. Right? And I don't go into mental math of if I did X, maybe I would have made more money. If I did Y, who knows? I don't know, right? But I am simply happy doing my job every day. So if you're a VC and you're going to look at your personal wealth equation or a founder, you know, every year, it's not going to work. If you focus on, you know, certain areas you want to go deep into and build expertise, much like the founder has to, even a VC has to, and you develop an investment thesis, you develop a playbook, and you're disciplined for 10, 15 years, you will win. You will have losses, but you will win. But you got to give that 10, 15 years and be disciplined.
Right. So it needs to be a very carefully considered choice. First of all, being clear about why you are getting in the first place, because it may not be for everything. For example, I know I probably cannot be good VC because, you know, I just have want too much control, you know, in terms of driving things and just, you know, watching from a distance is difficult for me. And hence, you know, I choose to do project where I'm more of a operator, or maybe I give advice, but knowing fully well that, you know, entrepreneur will make, you know, their own choice. So I think understand the reason, the value add, and then going through a 10 to 15 year apprenticeship to really learn the tricks of the trade and go through many cycles and see your own portfolio's power law experiencing that is probably going to vary. But I think, you know, if India's 10x alpha has to happen, I think entrepreneurs and VCs, you know, also have a huge role to play, because I don't think just traditional industry alone is going to create. I think technology has to play a bigger and bigger role, and that's where I think this VC entrepreneur ecosystem is going to play a very big role. But one, I just want to say, thank you for taking the time.
It was
There's so many different things we are able to speak about. I'm pretty sure people who watch this, you know, we'll take a lot of inspiration for things you have to share, as well as apply some of these, you know, tools and concepts in their lives. Thank you.
It was a great conversation. As you know that I have a lot of personal respect for you, personal affection for you. And I think as a firm, we have made a lot of money being involved with you. Thank you for that. Right. We couldn't continue to do fund after fund without founders. Deeply committed. One thing you always did was to say, I need my shareholders to make money, and that's not negotiable. And you always stood up for yourself, your team, and your shareholders. And I wish those were capsules we could feed everyone in the ecosystem. But I'm grateful for that role model you created also early on in the ecosystem.
Thank you, and you're very kind, and hope we continue to do that. And I think we'll have a lot of collaboration ahead of us in future as well.
Thank you.
At Sparks, we aim to bring to you stories of exponential impact. We share in-depth analysis of what goes behind success stories. If you find our conversations interesting, you can join us by subscribing to our YouTube channel. You can also listen to Sparks on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other audio platform of your choice.
If you have any suggestions on who we should invite or what topics we need to cover, just let us know in the comments. We are always listening, looking for ways to improve, and keep getting better as we go along.